The scripture lesson today is about Elijah and Elisha. And I'm going to ask you to listen very carefully to the story, and I will try very hard to pronounce a difference between Elijah and Elisha. So listen carefully. 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 1 through 2, and 6 through 14. Now, when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel." But Elisha said, "As the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. 50 men of the company of prophets also went and stood at some distance from them as they both were standing by the Jordan. Then Elijah took his mantle and rolled it up and struck the water. The water was parted to one side and to the other until the two of them crossed on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you." Elisha said, "Please let me inherit a double share of your spirit." He responded, "You have asked a hard thing. Yet, if you see me as I am being taken from you, it will be granted you. If not, it will not." As they continued walking and talking, a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them, and Elijah ascended in a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha kept watching and crying out, "Father, Father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." But when he could no longer see him, he grasped his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. He picked up the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. He took the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him and struck the water, saying, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" When he had struck the water was parted to the one side and to the other, and Elisha went over.
On Friday, I had the privilege of attending Caden's promotion to middle school with Kathleen while Clint is out of town this weekend for a wedding. I don't think Kathleen and the kids are here today. But it was a real joy. It's hard to believe that it's only been a year since the Gregory family has been a part of our lives. So much about a part of this church and this family they've become. So that about it, all of the Gregories have really found a home here. But Caden, in particular, has found his place. A place where he fits in, a place where he belongs. It really began to strike me as I sat and watched his sixth grade class file in, take the stage, and perform, singing some inspirational songs about who they would become. I began to get emotional. Earlier in the week, Sienna had her graduation from preschool right here in this very room as she said goodbye to Kids Castle, and with it, the only school she'd ever known, as she begins to prepare for kindergarten and years of school to come. Taylor, who doesn't seem to be here today, also graduates this year, not from preschool or kindergarten, or sixth grade, but high school, the real graduation, the last time you're mandated to go to school. So from here on out, it's voluntary. She's out there in the real world, and we all know it's sink or swim. As I sat there with Kathleen, I couldn't help but imagine the future graduations that I would sit through as a parent. As time will fly by, soon Molly will be graduating from this room, from preschool, and then kindergarten, and sixth grade, and eighth grade, and then the real actual graduation, high school and college. I realize that the future is before us. We are in their presence, and the present is an indicator of where we are set to go in the future. To be honest with you, I've had a hard time with the present of late. These last 2 weeks have heightened my anxiety about the world, my fears about what it's going to look like for Caden and Sienna and Taylor, my little Molly, all of our kids, KJ and Charlie. It's been a rough 2 weeks, and I find myself having to push to look for the good, to focus in on the positive. What happened in Orlando will not be easily forgotten. It seems that there's this permanent lump in my throat, and it's always just on the cusp of turning into full-blown sobs. I'm gut-wrenched about our inability to pass even the simplest of restrictions on guns and their sales. I start to wonder, do we really have any power at all when big money seems to dictate everything, even the most basic of protections for our children? The political climate is depressing, fearful. The news out of the Supreme Court this week about DACA and DAPA feels inhumane, and I'm hurting for the people that I love. People I know will contribute positively in our society if only given the chance. Actually, there are 11 million people already in our society, most of whom are contributing, and anti-immigration laws are not only hurting them, but all of us. And then the news about Britain bailing out of the EU and Prime Minister Cameron resigning. I mean, oh my gosh, I couldn't even imagine something like this happening. I'm worried, I'm shocked, I'm confused, I'm looking for stability, and it seems like the ground beneath me is just shaking. Who can we count on? Where is our leadership? And do they have the power to lead us out of the mess that we keep creating? It is hard not to fall into a pit of despair and begin to think that the whole world is just falling apart. Hopelessness is just right there, just a reach away. And I'm honestly afraid of giving in to those feelings because I'm scared and I'm sad. And I keep asking myself these questions in the middle of the night. What if we are living in the moment where everything falls apart? What are we going to do? And then I thought about Elisha, how he must have felt. He was depending on Elijah, the leader that he knew. He was God's guy. Elijah knew what to do. He knew how to do it. And now for poor Elisha, it felt like everything he had felt certain about was changing. The ground beneath him shifting out of his control and happening all too quickly. Elijah was his mentor. He was like a father to him. They were a team. Imagining life without him seemed impossible. How could he carry on with this mess of a world? How was he possibly supposed to be a prophet without Elijah by his side? Everything was changing and changing way too quickly. He just couldn't fathom it all. Elijah told him to stay where he was, but the thought of losing him was just unbearable. Elisha couldn't say goodbye. He couldn't let go. So they continued on together. Twice they reenacted the same scene because goodbye was just too hard, the future too murky. He couldn't let go. Not yet. I guess he must have felt that he wasn't capable of doing it alone, that he just didn't have the power or The Voice. That if Elijah died, he'd be left with nothing and there'd be no way he could possibly handle it all. So he did everything he could to keep from letting him go. I get that. Man, I'm looking for someone to lead me out of this mess. Boy, do I get that. There's so much fear in the unknown. There's so much change. And at the same time, there's just not enough of it. To be God's servant is a lot of pressure. To speak the prophetic voice when no one wants to hear it, or they want to hear other things, or the microphone is just out of reach, or the bullhorn is too expensive, or the soapbox is too high. It's easy to feel discouraged, afraid, perhaps even a little bit of that old not good enough. So we want to hold off a little bit longer, or hold on a little bit tighter, to let somebody else be the leader, to let them take the responsibility so that we don't have to carry it all. Because let's be honest, it feels so darn heavy. And it feels heavy because it is heavy. We know it. Elisha knew it. Heck, Elijah knew it. Sure, he knew it was hard, and yes, he knew that he was at the end of his journey, and he knew that there was still a whole lot of work to be done because there was still a whole lot of mess in the world. But Elijah knew something else, too. He knew Elisha would pick up the mantle when he was gone. He knew he could do it. He knew he would do it. And he did. He delayed a little bit. But Elijah humored him. He understood. It's hard. It's scary. There's a lot of pressure. So let's walk on a little bit longer together, side by side. They did. And finally, Elisha asked for one more thing. So nervous about continuing on without his mentor, his dearest friend, he requested this one last thing, a share of his spirit. A double share. It seems like an absurd request. A share of someone's spirit? I mean, is that like buying stocks? A share in Elijah's spirit? And not just one share. Elisha wanted to inherit a double share. But I guess what Elisha figured was this way, Elijah would always be with him. Elisha could have his wisdom and his courage and his voice when he lacked the wisdom and the confidence and the strength to speak out, to be the prophet that God had called him to be. Well, it was a tall order. "You've asked a hard thing," Elijah responded. And truthfully, he wasn't the one who could grant it. So he said, "All right, if you could watch me go, then you'll receive a double portion of spirit. If not, it just wasn't going to happen." I wonder if this itself was a test of courage, a challenge to Elisha, who had had such a hard time letting go, to watch Elijah go and realize that, yes, he was leaving him. And that meant all of the responsibility and all of the power was left upon him. It was hard to watch him go. But at the same time, letting him go was a sign of bravery. It was an acceptance of the task before him to carry on as a prophet, to pick up where Elijah left off, to, as we now say because of this very story, to pick up the mantle, to continue to live the legacy that Elijah had left for him. And so Elisha watched, and his friend, his teacher, his mentor, his father was swept up into a whirlwind, chariots of fire. In an unprecedented and yet to be repeated instance, he parted. That chariot of fire wedged between them, and Elijah ascended into heaven. And in that moment, Elisha received his spirit. He picked up the mantle, that fallen mantle, that heavy, weighty mantle. And despite how hard it was and all the responsibility that came with it, he picked it up and he returned to the Jordan, the way back. He parted the river, and with a new confidence and a new power, a stronger voice, he walked back into the world and all the mess he had waiting for him. He picked it up. Despite all of his misgivings and his fears, he picked it up and he continued on. All wasn't lost when Elijah left. In fact, now he had his spirit with him. He wasn't alone, and he never would be. But he had responsibilities, so he had to get back out there and get back to work to be the prophet that God had called him to be. So I think about the mess of our world and just how heavy it all seems and how hard it is to take it all in. And I remember that we've been called. Called by a God who demands our voices, that we might speak truth to power, that we might share the words of God's incredible, endless love, that we might preach about peace, that we might work for it and fight for it, that we might whisper hope in the places where despair appears to have taken hold. Reluctant as we may be, overwhelmed at times, just on the cusp of hopelessness, we remember that we have been called to pick up the mantle, to live out the legacy. Am I worried? Yes, I'm worried. Do I feel the way I do? Do I cry? Yeah. I'm going to pick it up. And I think you're going to pick it up. The same way Elisha did. Even in our reluctance, even in our fear, even in our doubt and in our uncertainty, we will pick it up because we owe it to Caden and Sienna and Taylor and KJ and Charlie and Nicole. We owe it to them to pick it up and fix this mess, to speak our truth even when it feels like we are shouting in the wind. Even when we feel like we are failing and flailing, we're not alone. We'll keep on preaching that prophetic word because God has given us the voice, a power that can and will carry us through, a spirit, a double share at that, that reminds us that we are not alone. I sat next to Kathleen and I was watching Caden, who many of you know, is kind of a shy guy. He was singing along to these songs. I saw in him this confidence that I knew his parents had prayed for. And so even as all the problems of the world were heavy upon me, I felt something new. I felt the joy that was surrounding me. It was this mix of emotion, joy, pride, fear, anxiety, hope. But on top of it all was this incredible energy of love. You can't imagine it, or maybe you can, emanating from these parents who were so proud of their kids. These friends, these grandmothers, these grandfathers, teachers and uncles, staff, cheering and clapping and just loving on these kids and all the power that they hold. We'd do better for them. We will do better for them. Better than this mess that we keep finding ourselves in. We just have to provide the future that they deserve. But I realized something else. That even as we let our Elijah go, and take on that spirit by picking up the mantle? We also prepare future Elishas to pick up the mantles that we will pass on. There's still hope. Actually, there's a lot left of it. And man, yesterday gave me a big, huge helping. But I know it's up to us, to you and to me, to do our part to cultivate it and work for it, to answer that prophetic call that God has for us in our lives, that we might carry that mantle with pride and couple it with humility as we walk humbly with our God to face the despair and find the hope and call out the injustice and work for peace. It is heavy and it is hard, but we will pick up that mantle and live out the legacy. Amen.